I'm here in Dublin and I'm talking to Mike Purcell. Mike, your length of time with Jacobs, when did you first go in and how long were you there?
Well, I answered an ad roughly in the middle 1960s, and it was for the position of project engineer, and I attended an interview in the old boardroom in Bishop Street, an old dark panel boardroom in Bishop Street, and the interview panel consisted of the engineering director, which is Mr. J.B. Jenkins, and the chief engineer, Mr. H. Mott, who are both rather forbidding-looking gentlemen. Absolutely straight back to the Victorian times. I mean, I felt as if I was in a film almost. And I got the job anyway, and I began work in the drawing office, which was a long, bright office on the top floor, and it was fitted with five large drawing boards, and the whole thing had windows along one side and looked out on Anger Street. And I started off there, and there were four other engineers in the office, myself, just to mention the names. Cecil Fry, who was who actually made the Fry Model Railway, which is now in Malahide Castle. Jonathan Bewley, who was one of the Bewleys who were associated with the running of the firm. Mike Kellett and Ken Wilson. And I was more or less attached like a child to Ken Wilson, who would instruct me on how things were done there.
And your own family, was your father? He didn't work in
Nothing
Jacobs
at all.
And no. So why did you decide to go into Jacobs in the first place?
Well, I'd gone through an engineering course in Bolton Street, and I was interested in getting a job. I had got a job in some awful little place in Kildare Street, I was just looking around for a decent job, and up came this ad. And nothing at all to do with my father. My father had a lot of connections with various business people. I didn't want to be in any sense associated with his business people or whatever. So I got the job, and I was really very happy.
What were you doing when you first...
My job was project engineer, which there was about five or six project engineers around the place, and there was lots and lots of jobs to do in a huge factory like that. Jacob's factory, if I can explain, was a huge factory taking up a whole block bounded by Anger Street, Bishop Street, Bride Street and Peter Street. And it consisted of offices on the front, and then there was a bakehouse inside with six long biscuit ovens, some of them actually going up a hill, which was the only ones in the entire world where ovens went up a hill. And there were secondary processing machines. These were the machines which added glam and glitz to the standard biscuit, like chocolate and marshmallow and all sort of things like that, and turned them into exotic creations. Then at the back, there was a huge warehouse, an enormous warehouse, where all these biscuits were stored on pallets and stuff to be sent off to the customers. And then there was a boiler house on the corner of Bride Street, which was converted to use turf around the 1950s. And I think the fact that was the difficulty in getting coal and stuff like that, but they found the turf was extremely efficient, so that the boilers were actually converted under the aegis of Bord na Mona. And they used turf, which meant that the money went into Ireland, they didn't buy coal, and the boilers were very efficient. So it was, you know, Jacobs, I think, were always very nationalistic. They liked to spend the money in Ireland to make sure that Irish people, you know, got the benefit of it.
And so your responsibilities were?
My responsibilities were basically, a project engineer was, every project was different. There was a whole lot of little things to be done. And these projects were handed out to be designed, drawings or to be made, the various things to which had to be done, and then the various aspects of the job, the trades and stuff like that which were involved. And then, having been told that they wanted to, say, to modify the end of number three machine, you had to go out, look at the thing, come back, draw it all up, figure out what had to be done, figure out what tradesmen would be involved, then cost the time that would be involved in that. And then when the whole thing was finished, the project went for approval. And if it did get approved, then off you went on the job with your fingers crossed, and then everything would turn out okay. The type of jobs varied from designing a small electrical panel to modifying a production machine, or in large cases to installing a 200-foot-long baking oven. And your time was spent solving all sorts of problems, and every day was different, which is great.
Yeah. I'm just imagining all the smells, you know, the baking, as you say.
All the smells were lovely. Yeah. As you came along, as you went along, for years and years before I joined Jacobs, as you passed down Angel Street, even in the bus or on your bike, you could smell the sort of creamy smell, and you knew where you were, sort of, you know, the famous thing, the smells of Dublin, the areas of Dublin, O'Keeffe, the Knackers, where they boil the horses, they were about 5 miles away, and if you're passing through that particular area, you could smell something that you didn't really wanted. Jacob's was a lovely, sweet smell, and of course, when you went around by Guinness's then, you got the smell of the hops, which is sort of quasi-alcoholic, so you hoped by fully, deeply ingesting the air that you might get something of free. But so Dublin was full of smells, but the Jacob smell was really very nice, I must say.
And so getting up in the morning and going in, you had to clock in. What was there piecework? Or were you, had you a set salary? Or?
Yeah, well, no, I had a set salary. And
how much were you getting?
I actually can't remember. Because I joined in 1966, so I really can't remember what it is. It was 100 and something a week, I think, maybe. But it was quite interesting because it was an old-fashioned firm, and nobody knew what each other's salary was, you see. So it was sort of, it was a very clever situation. But then 1 year, we got a rise, and I remember Mr. Jenkins giving you a rise of £156. I thought, God, that's very good. I must have really done great things. And gradually, I don't know how it came out, but it was discovered that everybody had £156 of a rise. Now, this was the first year this had ever happened. So then, of course, the engineer's office, we were blackguards, we put a huge big notice up in the office. Welcome to the 156 Club. And we sort of slightly upset the apple cart. Later on, then, when things happened, we sort of... we weren't getting a lot of satisfaction from the company, and we decided that we would join a union, so that we'd be able to sort of... more or less present our case and get things happening. They didn't really like that at all. There was a lot of sort of fifth column stuff where people were sitting in cars taking names of people who went into the meeting and all that sort of stuff. But anyway, there was a lot of intrigue. But eventually we joined the union. And the only reason we did is because it was very difficult to get any answer out of them about you and what your salary should be and so on and so forth.
Well, now, there were quite a number of unions involved.
Yep.
Because there were... Jacobs, I suppose, was made up of
yep.
so many different... sections.
That's right. I sit here, I can't remember which union I was in, but the union that I was in had a mixture of members from the offices and from the factory. So at one stage, there was a huge big kaboo in the factory, and everybody went out on strike. And we, of course, well, we had nothing to do with us. Oh, you're in the union, you're out as well. So then we found ourselves thrown out on the street for about 2 weeks. And we had to waste the machinations of a situation which didn't relate to us at all.
Yes.
You know, anyway, that was one of the misadventures of joining a union, although there were a lot of positives as well. But that's one which was not predictable.
Mm. How old-fashioned? How old... It was an old school of... You say the management were... It was...
Victorian.
I suppose handed down from the Victorian Edwardian.
Absolutely, yeah, very. I felt very much so that this was a very old firm. There's a whiff of the 1800s and stuff about it, you know. And the funny thing was, the manager was very stiff and starchy, and they all had three letters in front of their name: Mr. J. C. B. Smith, Mr. E. W. C. Carroll, and so on. Which was a very when you look at English colleges, it's an extremely English thing to have three initials in front of you. And I thought myself, and I just was wondering at the time, why is this? And then I sat back, you know, the sort of the West Britain touch about it. You could see more or less where it came from, but that was just one of the little side issues. I remember also going up to the top of the factory, and there's lots of abandoned areas and sort of mooching about and finding an old AOP helmet, and then thinking of, God, you know, what happened to this place during the war? But Jacobs was such a big factory. Each had about four floors. Each floor was about the size of 10 football fields. So as a sort of a youthful, wet behind the ears, young engineer, you'd set sail on this to go off to some distant place to measure up for something or other like that. And it was really, every day it was an adventure. And you'd meet these guys. The guys were in the trades. They were fantastic. Brilliant sense of humour. I've forgotten half of the jobs I was involved in, but what stays with me is the crack from these guys sense of humour was they never took anything seriously.
Yes. And was there a class order in the establishment?
There was, yes. There was definitely. There was them and us, you know. There was no doubt about that. There was... one of the things which demonstrated that was that there were three different canteens. So there was a canteen for the unmentionables, there was a canteen for us, who were the sort of the middle minority, and then there was a canteen for the general workers. So this was, you know, class distinction sort of in concrete. Later on, many, many years ago, when we moved to Tara, this didn't happen. And we were really amazed to see all the hoi polloi eating in the same canteen in Tara, which would never have happened in Bishop Street, you know. It was an attempt for them to sort of say, we're one of your guys, we're one of you, which they weren't, of course.
And as you said, the old premises, the way it was, it was all in sections.
Yes.
And then the transition, moving out to Tally, it was all under one roof. You could see everything together.
That's right.
And so, would you have your own clique, own a set of friends that you...
Ah, yes.
Did you build up?
Well, first of all, there was the guys in the office, and sort of all the engineers were all sort of stone mad, so that they were unreliable in all sort of sense, all sort of social senses. They were able to do their job perfectly. But we meet, and we'd meet at coffee time and have a sort of bit of a chat and stuff like that. And even now, long after the place is closed down, we still meet, and we call ourselves the Grandfather's Club. We have a meeting every day. But the coffee table meeting was very nice, and you know, you talked about everything, and everybody had a sort of a speciality.
Yeah.
And so that resulted, the conversation was always fascinating. Yeah, and also, the various sets of, wide sets of trades, every single trade that was there, plus a few more we had in Jacobs. So if you had terrible trouble with your car, you might be able to sort of bring it in on a Saturday morning, and a guy would have a little look at it, maybe give it a bang of this and that and the other, and sort of sort you out, like, you know. So they had every single trade you could think of, including extra ones like making corrugated paper, or we had a place for making tins, you know, and we even had a fully fledged printing section.
Right, and did you move yourself from one department to another during the course of your time, or were you all the time involved?
It's like the famous joke, I entered this town as a barefoot child and I left as a barefoot man. I went in as a project engineer and I left as a project engineer.
I see.
But I used to have sort of the regular ritual with my boss every year, and you know, the Stradivarius, you do a marvellous job, and if it was up to me, I would pay you a fortune, but it's up to them, of course, they won't give you anything. So I used to take out my Stradivarius and sort of make the shape, and he didn't think that was all that very funny. I said to him, how do I get more money? He said, you've got to join management. I said, well, listen, engineering is... I came in as an engineer. I can do that job. If you put me into a management, all I'm going to do is going to be negotiating fights between adults about lollipops. And then you stole my lollipop and I stole your lollipop. And finally, somebody gets the line. They all get half a lollipop each, and that's it, and we all go home. I said to myself often in the factory, I said, which of all the jobs in the factory, if I had an option to have, would I like to have? And it all came down, well, I'd like to have the one I have myself. Yes. I'm interested in how things work. I love taking the lids off things and looking inside. And some people are actually going to pay me money to do this, so I can play with huge big toys instead of small toys.
So what were you playing with? What kind of projects did you do?
Everything, as I say, from making small adjustments to machines, to modifying the machines, to getting new machines. And this shifted into high gear when we moved to Tala, when the job then became to moving the ovens from the Bishop Street premises to the Tala premises. And this was a big job, which was done by specialist contractors. But your job was to make sure that oven number 4 left Bishop Street and it landed in Tala and was then put all back together again and in a working condition. So you had to meet the guys from the UK who did this, explain what you wanted, and then take notes as the thing happened. Because the whole idea was you'd build up a file of what was inside these things.
Yeah.
And if something went wrong later on, you knew them from inside to out.